Hello, this is the Game Podcast from The Times, and I'm Natalie Sawyer. Joining Gregor Robertson and I today, it is Matt Dickinson. Matt, good afternoon. How are you?
Yes, very good. Boiling up a bit, but I'm well, thank you.
Yeah, how are you coping with the heat?
I've actually just had to shut the windows because there's someone's chosen a good time to build an extension next door. So, nothing like a bit of lockdown building to test the neighbourly relations.
Yeah, just what you need, absolutely. So that's a cue that if we hear any drilling, it's because of your next door neighbour's building work that's ongoing. So thanks for the heads up on that, Matt. Gregor, how are you keeping?
I'm good. I'm feeling rather smug, actually. I bought an air conditioning unit last year, and I've never been so happy to have that thing in my life.
And it probably works.
Honestly, unbelievable.
Oh.
You can sleep like a baby at night, because it's horrible at night time, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No wonder. You're like, bring on the heat. No problem for you. Oh, fantastic. Well, we've got loads coming up as we look at some high-profile moves in the Premier League and we discuss what happened to England's golden generation as they venture into management. But first, we welcome back the Champions League.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So let's start with the return of the Champions League then. A mixed bag for the English teams, but we have to talk about Manchester City's deserved victory over Real Madrid at the Etihad. Goals from Raheem Sterling and Gabriel Jesus either side of Karim Benzema's efforts were enough to give a 4-2 aggregate win and set up a quarter-final with Lyon. So it really is a case of no Aguero, no problem for City. But Matt, did we expect it to be as simple as it was for them?
Well, I think there was a bit more trepidation in the air, given that Real had sort of seemed to be fixing a few issues since return of lockdown. I mean, I was lucky enough to be at the Bernabeu for the first leg, and it was to have come away with that result. Kevin De Bruyne, strutting his stuff, was hugely impressive. But that sort of feels like several lifetimes ago, doesn't it? I was sort of, an age pre-COVID. So it was, they were coming back with a lot of uncertainty in the air. But Sergio Ramos on the bench, in the stands, clearly proved, a huge factor in the sense of Real's defensive, shambles at times. I mean, Rafael Varane is one of those players you look at, and he's always seemed a Rolls Royce of a footballer, one of those guys who just seems to sort of glide around. There's something lovely in his movement. He sort of seems sort of quite untypical as a centre half in many ways, but maybe this was the night when he needed to be a very stereotypical centre half and just get rid of the bloody ball, because obviously that was ultimately their undoing. But even if you sort of isolate those mistakes, I think City deserved it just for their overall approach. And they just looked the better team over two legs, no doubt about it.
Yeah, Gregor, Matt's mentioned Sergio Ramos there, who was suspended. Do you think he really could have made the difference for Real Madrid?
Well, look, Real Madrid they're always a lot stronger with Ramos in the team. Those two errors really gave City the kind of cushion that they needed, because, as Matt says, they were the better team, but when they're gifted a goal, it makes their life so much easier and the game so much easier to manage. I was quite surprised. I mean, I know Real Madrid and Barcelona too are not in the rudest of health. Haven't really been for a little while, but the way that Manchester City kind of pressed them and harried them. It was very impressive. And, you know, I think Guardiola, kind of the way that he set City up to play and to really give them no time or space on the ball, I think really they were absolutely deserving winners.
Well, Pep Guardiola's side will now face Lyon in the one-game knockout format in Lisbon after inflicting Zinedine Zidane's first elimination from the Champions League, the French manager having won it three times in his three previous seasons in charge. Now, they do still hope to have Aguero back to take part in this mini-tournament, but it is looking less and less likely as he continues his recovery from a knee injury. Just a word on that, Matt. Is it a big blow for them to not have Aguero when you consider that performance just in midweek against Real?
Well, I think it's always a blow not to have Aguero. I mean, I think Jesus is still, even with the way he took the second goal, he's still, sort of trying to fill, the big shoes. Aguero's just, his consistency, his ability just to strike in all sorts of ways, just to prove so clinical so many times. It's a big loss. He's been one of the greatest sort of signings to the Premier League in 20-30 years. So, look, City are clearly, they've got enough strengths, they've got enough variety. Jesus is good enough to help them to win a Champions League trophy. But I think Aguero is always going to be a loss. I think you hope that he can be involved. I think especially if with looking at this different format. And potentially three games, back to back. I think, at the very least, if they can get him involved, then that will be a big fillip.
Well, this is how the remainder of the draw looks then. On Wednesday, it's Atalanta against PSG. Then on Thursday, RB Leipzig take on Atletico Madrid. Friday sees Barcelona face Bayern Munich. And then on Saturday, it's Manchester City versus Lyon. And then you have the semi-finals, of course, to come following that with the Champions League final itself on Sunday, the 23rd of August. Now, we know this is the one trophy that Manchester City, Gregor, have been wanting. Is this their best ever chance to win it then?
It's certainly, when you look at the draw and, Atalanta, Leipzig, they're playing Lyon in the quarters. Barcelona are still in kind of a bit of turmoil. They're definitely not in a healthy state at the moment. We're going to come on to talk about Bayern and Lewandowski. But really, I can't think of many years where there's been quite as few heavyweights. And they've avoided any of them in the quarterfinal. So, and I think the thing is this year, Manchester City seem to have played their best football in the Champions League. And, that possibly the whole thing about the league basically being over in kind of January, February time, there's always been this sort of narrative underneath it all that, City can try and save themselves for the Champions League. And it's not worked out like that because of the way the world's been turned upside down. But in this little mini tournament, I think alongside Bayern, they're the team in the best shape to win the competition. I think, Barcelona are not in good shape. Atletico have obviously, I think, two players have contracted coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And although the way they overcame Liverpool was hugely impressive, I still don't think they're quite the same team that they were in years gone by. As I said, Leipzig, Lyon and Atalanta, they're all great stories, but they're not the kind of real heavyweights. They're not a Juventus, a team like that. So I absolutely think that the path is clearer for Manchester City than this year than it has been, any years in the past.
Mm. Matt, do you agree?
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, I agree with Gregor. I think, Bayern Munich is probably, they've got a formidable game, first. But I would say Bayern is the team you're looking at and thinking, on quality and on a bit of form and everything else. They look the side I would most fear. But I think, City have to look at this, I think, and think they have a fantastic opportunity. We mentioned about Aguero, but I mean, if De Bruyne is on song and in form, then there doesn't seem to be there's barely a better player out there, Lionel Messi and Alphonso Davies and you know, Lewandowski, we're just about to come on to, will have something to say about that. But De Bruyne is capable of lifting this team to the ultimate prize.
Well, let's mention Bayern Munich then, as you've both suggested it. Chelsea will have to go again next season after they were comfortably beaten 4-1 by Bayern in Germany to be dumped out of the competition 7-1 on aggregate. Two more goals for Robert Lewandowski takes his tally in the Champions League this season to 13 goals in 7 appearances. Having scored one and assisted the other two goals in the first leg, he was directly involved in all 7 of Bayern goals over the two legs. 3 goals, 4 assists. He's just 4 now behind Cristiano Ronaldo's record haul in one season of scoring 17 in the competition. That was for Real Madrid back in 2013-14. So, Gregor, could he be peaking at just the right time to win the competition for Bayern? You've mentioned that they're just as in a sort of healthier state as Manchester City are.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, he's kind of, I think he scored 40 plus goals in the last 5 years. So he's always been in good shape, but he does seem to be hitting new heights at the moment. And, you know, for a guy who's, I think he turned 32 quite recently, he seems to be improving. Seems to be fitter and stronger than ever, and, you know, capable of scoring a variety of goals. The header, the third goal against Chelsea was superb. And I think he is someone who is capable, as you know, as Matt said, De Bruyne is the kind of talisman for Man City. He is capable of winning games almost single-handedly for Bayern Munich. But that, the thing is, if you look at, you know, you look at Barcelona, and they have all these teams that are left in the competition, they have an outstanding talent who can do that. But I think Lewandowski is, you know, I think the very fact that he's competing with Ronaldo now and Messi, I think if he wasn't born in the same generation of these two players, he would be talked about as, you know, a real kind of one of the best player in the world, really. He's certainly the best number 9 in the world at the moment.
Does he not get the credit he deserves then, Matt, do you think?
I think sometimes in England we've been a bit sly. I went lucky enough to sit down with him at the Bayern Munich training ground earlier this season. And he was fascinating company. He talked really well just about how much he has worked on, well, partly his body. He's got a wife who's a sort of sports scientist, nutritionist, and you know, he's nicknamed The Body over there, and you know, how that's been, you know, the discipline that goes into that, but also the mentality. You know, he talked about how he's actually done brain training to look at his reflexes and his sort of coolness under pressure. You know, he was talking about this thing that the best strikers have, where, you know, they do not get that rush of blood. They just keep their cool, pick their spot, you know, do what it takes. And he was really interesting about, you know, all the things that have to come together to be as consistent as he has been, you know. And yeah, I think Greg is right. I think, you know, he is you know, proven a real world-class talent. We very easily sort of talk about Harry Kane as if, or have done at times, as if he's, you know, there can't be a better number 9 out there. Well, you know, Lewandowski's been doing it as well, if not better, certainly for longer. So no, I think, you know, if he doesn't get the credit he deserves, it's high time he should.
So why do you think that is, Gregor? Why does he get overlooked so much as that number 9, as you pointed out?
I think we have a kind of tendency in this country to just look at anything beyond the Premier League. We think, oh, he needs to come to the Premier League and prove himself here. As if, I mean, that's not true. He's playing for one of the biggest teams in the world. And, you know, although Bayern dominate the Bundesliga every season, it's still a very hugely competitive league. And they're in the kind of mix of among the real heavyweights every year in the Champions League. And as I said, to score 40 plus goals in 5 consecutive seasons, there only is really a Ronaldo and Messi who better that. I think probably it's only here that there's any kind of question mark. And I think really, if people are genuine sort of lovers of football and watch it with great interest, particularly in the Champions League, then I don't think there could be any doubt that he's the best number 9 in the world. He's the most complete, the best all-rounder. As you see by all the types of goals he can score, you know, world-class goals from outside the box. His timing of his runs is perfect. He's an absolute athlete. As Matt said, You know, he's got the same kind of dedication as a Ronaldo, and so powerful in the air as well. So he's a complete number nine.
Matt, from the time that you did meet him that you mentioned already, is he someone that looks to break records? Obviously, we said he's just four behind Ronaldo's record haul of goals in a Champions League season. Is that something he would want to break? Can we see him doing that?
I think so, yeah. It was interesting, again, how he talked about how there was a sort of shift in mentality, and he actually credited Jurgen Klopp with it. He said that when he was working with Klopp at Dortmund, he was a striker, a goal scorer, but he said he probably didn't quite have the single-mindedness. And then Klopp, I mean, this sounds sort of rudimentary motivation and training, but he basically said, Klopp said to him, look, you know, €50 for every goal you score in this practice game. And then I think basically after about 2 weeks of that, Klopp said, okay, right, enough's enough. He was losing too much money. But he talked about how Klopp just used little tricks like that to get him thinking, you know, that sort of cliche we use about, you know, strikers have got to be selfish. But he said he had to learn a bit of that. You know, he was a sort of decent all-round forward, but it took a shift in mentality under Klopp to really make him that ruthless and in that mode to... Yeah, he wants to win the big prizes. I think he's regarded as, you know, a good team player, a good team man. But even then, he said he actually had to learn that. You know, he said he used to be maybe a bit more sort of, you know, aloof or kept himself to himself, and he's become much more integral to the team. So, but no, I think it will matter to him. I think, you know, these guys ultimately they want to win the big team prizes, but. Yeah, individual records will matter as they, you know, and as they should. I mean, it's not a small thing to have, is it?
No, absolutely not. So it's all looking good for Bayern Munich, but it was a disappointing finish for Frank Lampard and Chelsea, who have problems in defence ahead of the new campaign, having conceded 79 goals in 55 games in all competitions this season. Now, Lampard's been widely praised for the job he's done this season in his first role at Stamford Bridge, finishing in the top four, of course, and reaching the FA Cup final. But over the weekend, Chelsea fans have been quick to point out the following, that he took Chelsea from third place to fourth, got 6 points fewer than Maurizio Sarri, conceded as many league goals as Brighton, lost the FA Cup final to an eighth placed Arsenal, and have now lost 7-1 on aggregate to Bayern Munich. It seems the critics are now out, Gregor. Are they right to be so critical?
I think it's been pretty fascinating, actually, how kind of long running this and the sort of peaks and troughs in the Frank Lampard story of this season. It's, you know, they've gone on a good run at several points of the season, and you think, oh, what a job he's doing, and then they lose to a Newcastle or someone, and you know, as you say, the knives come out, and it's also this whole sort of underlying thing about whether he's had an easy ride in the fact he's getting the job in the first place after one season at Derby, and the fact that he's kind of matey with a lot of people in the media, and a lot of people think he gets an easy ride in that regard. But I think dispelling all that and the whole thing about the transfer ban, and he had to introduce kids, although it seems like he would have done that anyway, I still think it's been a successful season in that he's made the Champions League. That's important from a financial standpoint. He took them to the cup final, and it was a disappointing way to end. And there are question marks about the Chelsea style of play. They've been thrilling to watch at times, but you know that number of goals is hugely alarming. And part of that is down to personnel, but part of it is down to the way that sometimes you could drive a double-decker bus through their midfield. So there's, you know, I think next season is the season you have to judge him on, because he's going to get back this summer. They're already signed several players, and you know it sounds like there's going to be a lot of investment in the team this summer. So I think next season you have to judge Frank Lampard. You know, I think a little bit more sternly. I think it's for his first season in the Premier League at a club where, you know, quite a lot of pressure on him, despite that context of his club he's, you know, been associated with for many years. I still think it's been a success for him.
How do you assess that first season in charge then, Matt?
Yeah, I think you've got to put it in the context of where he's at in his career. You know, first season, you know, dropped in a big job, you lose Eden Hazard, you know, clearly you're outstanding player. And I think, you know, you in that context, he's showing promise. He's also making mistakes, and that's pretty inevitable when you're talking about a guy who's had a couple of seasons in the job. So, you know, right, we've seen issues of balance, say the balance between, you know, defence and attack. We've seen issues of keeping a midfield cover of that defence. You know, he's tried different formations, mixed it around. And I think, but I think you have to see the mistakes, but also see the momentum. I think there are, you know, I see improvement. I always look at how are individual players coming on under a manager. You look at someone like Christian Pulisic, who's really stepping up more and more, looking like, you know, one of the most exciting players in the league. You know, Lampard gave him made him sit and wait early on in the season to readjust, to sort of show him what he wanted in training, and now he's really coming through. I think there's, you know, improvements in other players. So I think the cup is certainly more half full than half empty. I think I think for a young manager, he's learning on the job, and you know, I think he's a bright enough guy to learn, and there are going to be more mistakes, but I suspect he'll need this season again to do it with, you know, Ziyech and Timo Werner and potentially other signings as well.
Gregor, you mentioned that long association that Frank Lampard has had with Chelsea. Is there any suggestion that perhaps he's getting an easier ride because of the history that he has at the club? Like, if this was Jose Mourinho in charge, would he be getting the plaudits, let's say?
Well, if it was, we only have to go back a year to Maurizio Sarri, and I mean, he finished with more points, as you said. They won the Europa League, and he was they were almost hounding him out, the supporters. And there's issues of stylistic issues in the way that he played. But I think, you know, if you were to say that Frank Lampard had had that season that Sarri had last season and played the same football, undoubtedly he would have had an easier ride. But that, you know, he can't do anything about that, and you know, there's a balance in this. It is, a lot of people say, you know, he has had a very kind of cushy start to his career in management, which is true. But he is Frank Lampard. He had a big association to the club. The opportunity presented himself. It's up to him to now take it. And I think, you know, there's enough evidence that Matt kind of alluded to it there. You see that the players are engaged. That looks like they want to play for him. I know that a lot of them were. You can point to the guys who were brought in, like Mason Mount and Tammy Abraham, and you know, he knew some of these guys along with Jody Morris from the academy. But even, you know, throughout the team, I think it looks like the players want to play for him. And despite some of the kind of tactical issues, we're also comparing him to two of the best managers, the two best managers in the world, really, above him. And Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola, and he's not going to be at their level. So, as I say, I think next season is the season to judge Frank Lampard a little bit more harshly.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The transfer window, of course, is in full swing. So why don't we take a look at some of the latest rumours? Let's focus on Willian, shall we? The Brazilian winger has written an open letter to Chelsea fans insisting, "I leave with my head held high, safe in the knowledge that I won things here and always did my best in a Chelsea shirt." As the 32-year-old confirms his departure then from the club after 7 years ahead of his impending move to Arsenal. Matt, there's a lot of late where players over a certain age we seem to sort of write off. Certainly, clubs seem to. Are Chelsea too quick to write someone like Willian off, who's over 30?
Well, a lot of it obviously can always come down to value as well of, you know, re-signing and they're, you know, they're partly thinking in football terms and partly thinking in business terms as well. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of clubs have shown in the last 5 years or so that they, you know, they like to offer those short term contracts to players over 30. Chelsea wouldn't be the only one doing that. But I think, you know, when you look at the signings that Chelsea are making, I think Willian has, you know, I think he's entitled to make those claims for Chelsea. He's been excellent for them, you know, hugely versatile, you know, done an awful lot of good work for them. But I think, you know, when you look at, say, different players coming in, you look at the strength they've got in those sort of wide forward roles, with Ziyech arriving, obviously, you know, Timo Werner can play wide forward, you've got, you know, Hudson-Odoi, etc., Mason Mount's been, you know, used in midfield and as a sort of wide forward, you know, there's going to be some, shall we say, rotation and wastage. But I think you know, Willian can leave with his head held high, as he says.
So for you, Gregor, if he does move to Arsenal, is he going to be a hit or a miss?
I think he'd be a hit. I mean, there's been periods of the season, actually, particularly after the restart, where there was a period where he was Chelsea's best player, and he's still capable of winning a game for the team. So, you know, I think there are question marks. If he is to get a 3-year deal, as being reported, then, you know, there'd be question marks around that. But for a player who still looks to be in his prime, really, on a free transfer, it's a no brainer for Arsenal. And I think he's improvement what they've got. I mean, Arsenal's front three is Pepe still kind of got a lot to do to sort of prove himself at Arsenal. Aubameyang, Lacazette, there's still uncertainty about, you know, their futures at the club. And behind that, there's, you know, you're looking at young players who've come through the academy. So to add someone of experience and his quality on a free transfer, absolutely good business for Arsenal.
But you seem to question a 3-year deal, Gregor. Why is that?
Well, I think, you know, I think when players get over 30, it's hard to judge, because I don't know Willian. I don't know his kind of his character, shall we say. You know, when you get, it's the same with Aubameyang. When you're the wrong side of 30, and, you know, you're slightly potentially more prone to injury, motivation can dip at certain points in your career, and you know, it's always a possibility. So I think you always question it when a player, if it takes them up to 35. But as I say, when there's no transfer fee involved, I think it is, you know, still on balance, good business.
The Southampton midfielder Pierre-Emile Højbjerg is undergoing a medical at Tottenham. The clubs agreed a deal last week with the 25-year-old Denmark international choosing Spurs ahead of Everton. And meanwhile, Kyle Walker-Peters is set to be going the other way after a loan spell at St Mary's last season. Now, the fees are undisclosed, but it's been reported that Spurs will pay Southampton at least £3 million more for Højbjerg. Where do you stand on Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, Matt? Would that be a good signing for Tottenham?
I think he's a, you know, he's a good player, decent signing, but, you know, more intrigued about, I guess, who's going to lose out, because, you know, you sort of you're thinking, obviously, he's been signed to come straight in. Does this mean that Winks is now, you know, going to be the one who drops away, which I think is, you know, I guess you can't help but think partly as an English supporter that would be a shame, and what this says for his future, because, you know, I think he has not kicked on quite as I thought he might do at the start of the season, but I think, yeah, I think there's real promise there. So that, yeah, that's the bit that, you know, you look at Spurs and there's quite a lot of options in that central midfield role. So I am intrigued to see, yeah, who he nudges out.
Mm. Where would you stand on this one, Gregor, in terms of, is it a signing Tottenham fans will be excited by, or will they be a little bit underwhelmed?
I wouldn't say excited would be the right word, no. I think he's a Jose Mourinho signing. He's a bit of a street fighter. He'll sit in front of the back four and he's very combative and, you know, committed. But he's not someone who's going to get the fans kind of quickening their step to the stadium if they're allowed back next season. So no, it's not going to be. He's not like a marquee signing for Spurs. But I think he's been effective for Southampton for a few years now in the Premier League. And, you know, there's a few teams who are interested in him, and I think he's a good player for where Spurs are at the moment.
David Brooks is another name being talked about as of late. Liverpool, Everton, Tottenham, West Ham all reportedly interested in signing the Wales midfielder following Bournemouth's relegation to the Championship. Gregor, David Brooks should be in the Premier League?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, if he hadn't suffered a long-term injury, I think Bournemouth would have been possibly under pressure to sell him before now. I think he's a hugely talented player. I think when you look at those teams you mentioned, though, like at Liverpool, he wants to go and play football now, particularly after a long layoff. So I think Liverpool would be a stretch. Mm. Everton or Tottenham, yeah, I think that's the kind of level he's capable of playing at. Absolutely, I think West Ham. I don't know. I'm still not. Producer Max won't be happy with me saying this, but I'm still not convinced that West Ham are going to be kind of on an upward trajectory next season. I still think how much support and backing Moyes will get is up for debate. And there's been quite a lot of talented players have gone to West Ham over recent seasons and not really produced the best football. So I also think someone like going back to Sheffield United would be great for him. I think. You'd be guaranteed to play. They're a, you know, upwardly mobile team, and the kind of player that would really improve Sheffield United. Actually, they had to tell him to help rebuild their team and to get promoted. And you know, possibly he's going to be out of their reach, but I think that'd be a good fit as well.
I cannot believe what you said about West Ham. Producer Max will be livid with you. You probably have that whole bit edited out just because of that.
Okay, <fair enough>.
And lastly, of course, we have to talk about one of the stars for Sheffield United, as you've already mentioned, Dean Henderson. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer admits he can't keep three top-class goalkeepers happy at Manchester United, paving the way for Dean Henderson to spend another season out on loan. His future could be linked to that of Sergio Romero, with the backup keeper believed to have been particularly frustrated by his omission from the FA Cup semi-final last month. But if we focus on Dean Henderson, would it be right for him to go back to Sheffield United, Matt, for another season, would you say?
Well, he needs to. If that's the only place best place he's going to play, it may have to be. I mean, I think, you know, the bigger issue, obviously, the first big issue is David De Gea. You know, we've obviously spent plenty of time talking about his wobbles, to put it mildly. You know, and I think that's, you know, the issue there. You've got, you know, on a big, fat, long term contract, and since he signed it. Plenty of reasons to repent on that and wonder if it was a mistake. So, but I think, you know, Henderson is at a stage in his career. He needs to play. So he certainly shouldn't be going back to United just to be twiddling his thumbs and waiting for a cup match. That's for sure.
I suppose, Greg, well, that is the problem, isn't it? Because, as Matt's pointed out, the David De Gea situation is still to be resolved, of whether or not they're going to keep him or whether they'll sell him, let's say. And as Matt's pointed out, Dean Henderson won't want to stay on the bench when he's had such a great season playing week in, week out for Sheffield United.
Yeah, I think he's a confident lad, and I'm sure I think he would be wanting to look to have a very honest conversation with Solskjaer to see about, you know, what is my future. If the time comes to say David De Gea, like we can't really go on any further with these errors and with the kind of dip in form, am I the man who's going to play? Are you going to look to buy another goalkeeper? The thing is, you know, Solskjaer's going to have to keep one of those goalkeepers, one a quality backup, because De Gea's form is so unsteady and uncertain. But Matt's right, he has to play. I just wonder how long he goes on doing this. I think if he does go back to Sheffield United, you would hope this maybe his last loan spell, because, you know, after that you want to go out and sort of, you know, it's very rare. It's what happened with Martinez at Arsenal. You know, I've been at the club for so long, and, you know, playing a few cup competition games, going so many loans, and coming back and now sort of stating a claim and having a run in the team. That's very rare. It doesn't happen very often. So I think, you know, Dean Henderson's got big kind of lofty aspirations. He wants to be England's number one, and it's not unrealistic. So I think he needs to kind of find a home, certainly in the next year or so.
We finished today's pod by talking about Sol Campbell. Matt Lawton has done a brilliant interview with him for The Times about his eagerness to get back into management so people can see him at his best. Now, he's a name in football that needs little introduction, of course, with a playing career to match most elite stars. He was among England's finest defenders, a former centre-half, named in the team of the tournament at both the 2002 World Cup and the 2004 European Championship. He was also a key member of Arsenal's Invincibles and the captain of a Portsmouth side that exceeded all expectations by lifting the FA Cup in 2008. Now he's trying to make his name in management, having been on the same UEFA Pro licence course as Patrick Vieira, Craig Bellamy and Gary Monk. Matt, when you think back to Sol Campbell as a player, did you think he'd be someone that would go into management?
I don't think, to be honest, I don't think I knew, in the sense of, I think this is part of the whole discussion we're going to have, that Sol was sometimes seemed a tricky guy to read, and that seems to be sort of wrapped up in a lot of the judgments that are sort of raining down on him now. I mean, just one thing I would sort of preface all this with is that, you know, I thought it was a really interesting interview. But yeah, having retweeted it over the weekend, I sort of attached it with and seen the reaction. I sent another tweet just saying, look, I don't know if Sol Campbell is going to be a good manager or not, but when you see some of the reaction, you see what he's up against. And it was frightening. And, you know, I think the amount of, say, judges that reigned on him is shocking, actually, to behold. And partly because he sort of doesn't fit sort of neat boxes that people want him to. You know, I sat down with him. This isn't really answering the question, but I'll go on anyway. But I've sat down with him a few times, but I sat down with him at length. I think it was probably sort of 3, 4, 5 years ago. He'd just brought out his autobiography, and he talked through, you know, he's so used to being told that he has a chip on his shoulder, basically. That's to put it bluntly. And he, when you sort of listen to his background as being one of the youngest of 12 and what he came up through as, you know, basically fending for himself on an estate and having a hell of a tough time of it, you sort of get to sort of see his character in the round a bit more and understand why he feels he has to fight for everything, why he gets angry about certain things, including his perception of clear prejudice against him. And you understand, he is a bit different. But there are some very good reasons for that, and there are very good reasons why he gets angry and thinks that he is not being given a fair chance.
Well, it has been a turbulent ride for Campbell in management, having often hit the headlines for the wrong reasons. It took him 6 years to land his first coaching role with Trinidad and Tobago, and was also turned down in favour of Gary Neville to work under Roy Hodgson for England at Euro 2016. But when top jobs and even a brief foray into politics to look at running for London mayor didn't really come his way, he found opportunities only lower down the pyramid, first with Macclesfield and then Southend. Now, Macclesfield wasn't an attractive job, a newly promoted League Two club sitting 5 points adrift of safety and in such dire financial straits that they were unable to pay the players, never mind their manager. By the time he left the following summer again, by mutual agreement, the club were facing a winding up order from HM Revenue and Customs and owed him money as well. Gregor, it's sort of a sorry tale when you look at Sol Campbell's management career. How many players of his sort of calibre, and we've listed already what he's achieved in the game, have had to go as far down as he has had to get a job?
Not many. And, you know, Paul Ince is another one that really jumps to mind immediately. And that was with Macclesfield too. And, of course, he's black as well. So that doesn't paint a good picture. I think it wasn't a mistake for him going down there, because I think actually it was, if there were doubters, and there were many of them, it kind of made people sit up and think, fair plays, you know, he's willing to take on an enormous challenge, and he succeeded, and that was an enormous challenge. Macclesfield were an absolute basket case when he took over. In fact, they were all the way through his time at the club too. He had to deal with so much, and I was at the game when they stayed up in the final day of the season. Notts County went down instead, and you know, everyone's celebrating on the pitch, and that was a remarkable achievement. And he just said afterwards, you know, I just want to have kind of a chance next year. And he didn't mean that elsewhere. He meant I want a chance to compete with Macclesfield now, and that I want the players to be paid on time. I want a budget that's actually, you know, you're given a budget at the start of the season and this is what you're allowed to spend, and this is, you know, you're allowed to bring in so many players. You just essentially wanted a chance, and he's still looking for that, because that never appeared the next season. The next season he was gone a few games into the season because, you know, players still weren't paid and it was still a mess. And Southend really weren't in any better state. So he's still not had that chance that he wanted. At this, you know, he's wanted for so long. He wanted after Macclesfield, and he still wants it now, as he told Matt in that excellent interview. So, there's so much nuance to this, I think, because he is sort of idiosyncratic. There's no two ways about that. And I know, you know, I knew one or two guys in the Macclesfield team, and there was things about him that even they rubbed them up the wrong way a little bit. And that's not getting away from the fact that he galvanised them, got them playing much better football and winning more points. But he is someone who he's slightly different, as Matt said, but that shouldn't stop him from getting a job as a manager, I don't think.
Well, from Macclesfield, obviously, he went to Southend, which wasn't much more stable. Before taking charge of his first game, he watched them lose 7-1 to Doncaster. His first result was then a 3-1 defeat at home by Ipswich Town. And when the season was called to a sudden halt because of the pandemic, they were second from bottom and relegated, and he chose to move on. Raheem Sterling noted the opportunities afforded Campbell and Ashley Cole compared to Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard, while Lampard is now the manager at Chelsea after a decent season at Derby. Cole is coaching Chelsea's under-15 side, while Gerrard has landed his first job with Rangers. Campbell has had to work unpaid amid the financial madness of Macclesfield Town before a similarly challenging spell with Southend United. Matt, do you see any way back for him in the management world?
I think if he wants to, then yeah, I do. But you know, he would say yeah, but it will not be the same opportunities that he thinks he would get if he was a white member of the Golden Generation. And you know, I think there is a debate to be had around that, but I suspect the debate is more helpful when it's looked at in the wider context of, you know, we know the proportion of black players throughout the league, and we see the much, much lower proportion of black faces in the dugout, and obviously still less anywhere near ownership or boardrooms. And, you know, Sol is articulating And, you know, there are people who react badly to it because it comes from him, but I don't think with any fairness in them is going to, you know, dispute that there is an important wider debate to be had just around, you know, representation, why black coaches you speak to all the time, or black players who come to the end of their careers, you know, many of them believe that they will not get them opportunities. It's a perception, you know, they're entitled to that perception. They think it's real. And, you know, as long as there is that belief, then football's got a problem. You know, wider society has, but football, that likes to think it does so much for anti-racism, you know, has still got a lot of work to do around that sense of fair opportunity. We talk about Rooney Rule and different ways of attacking it, but we're nowhere near fixing it. And say, Sol Campbell, the way he says it or coming from him seems to anger a lot of people. But if they sort of try and depersonalise it a bit, they'll see that there is an important debate to be had.
Of course, Gregor, many do point to Campbell's management record, which perhaps isn't the best statistically. And obviously, we've spoken about the financial woes of Macclesfield and of Southend. So, in a way, does he not need to be judged, if given the opportunity, at a club that perhaps is more stable than the two that he's already had a spell at?
Yeah, this is the whole thing. He's not being afforded that opportunity. So it's hard, you know, how we can't judge him fairly at the moment, because.
But yet he's still being judged.
Absolutely.
That's the problem.
Absolutely. Mm. So, look, I think it's a quite a complex situation with Sol Campbell, because he, you know, there have been some of his kind of his utterances have made you think, like, you're not maybe helping in terms. He said, "I'm one of the greatest minds in football." I think that was one thing he said when he was unveiled at Macclesfield, and you know that was probably not helpful. But that Sol Campbell is very confident, and he's got every right to be, because he had he was right when he said he was one of the best footballers of his generation. That's absolutely true, and a lot of the best footballers of their generation get far better opportunities than he has. So, I think he will get another opportunity. I think it'll be, you know, I think a club. And it probably won't be again still at a level like the Championship or the Premier League. I'd be surprised personally if that comes around next time around. But a team maybe in League One that has more solid foundations and gives them an opportunity to work hard and impress and to show what he's capable of. And I really hope he gets that chance, because he deserves that chance as much as anyone.
Absolutely. And that's what it all comes down to, being given that opportunity to perhaps showcase his talent that he's not been able to do because he's been at two clubs that have struggled. Do you ever believe, Matt, that former clubs should owe their former players something like Arsenal? Should they be getting involved in this situation?
Well, I think that they have a history looking sort of, you know, more kindly at former players. You know, clubs like the connection, fans like the connection. I don't think there's a duty, you know. I think it's got to be, you know, mutually beneficial. There's got to be a point. It can't just be because you're a famous face or a popular player. But no, I mean, I think, you know, again, I'm sure Sol would come up with, you know, other ways in which he thinks former clubs have, yeah, probably not given him a sort of fair nod either, where they may have looked at other faces. I don't mean it's instantly, well, because you were great for Arsenal, you should get a coaching role there. But equally, some former players have. I think the key thing really is that people just sort of, you know, sometimes I think, you know, the interview with Sol was with Sol, and you know, he says his stuff, and it's seen as provocative. But I think people ultimately have to see the bigger context here, and that's which is the most important thing.
Well, that is it for now. Many thanks to Gregor and to Matt. Remember to subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times for award-winning journalism on every platform. It's just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information, and we will be back with you on Thursday.
approaching junction at platform. Passengers, by report, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.